Dynasty Theory is now a proud member of the DLF family of podcasts, and we could not be more excited. Tune in each and every week when we provide actionable advice to help you navigate through the crazy world of Dynasty Fantasy Football. We're always diving into quickly changing values, market inefficiencies, and opportunities to help you build those dynasties. Make sure you also check out the show on Twitter and Instagram at Dynasty Theory FM. Enjoy.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Read and React. I am Tom Kislingbury, your host of our magnificent little football show, talking about defensive players. I'm joined here by Mike Wallett. We did talk to you last week, so it feels a bit weird, but after technology and communication snafu, it never actually made it to you. So we're going to try and not refer to things we talked about last week. Mike, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, back in the States. So I am ready to watch... get back to watching football. So back and ready to go.
Yeah, obviously you've been away for a week, so you've got no idea what's going back in the US, but we are recording here on Friday. So last night we saw the Browns-Steelers game. If it wasn't for that late historical collapse by the Browns, they would have started 3-0. So obviously they had a heel turn in the summer. Was it a really good heel turn where they suddenly got a load of momentum, like baddie Steve Austin?
Actually, it's more like I'd like it almost to the Hulk Hogan leg drop heel turn, because everybody still loved Steve Austin. I mean, he was like the loved heel, so he's like the anti-hero. So this was similar to everybody now hated with Hulk Hogan. Everybody's now hating us, which I'm fine with. I actually like being the heel. The heel is a lot of fun. I don't like the circumstances surrounding it, but you know, it is what it is. But I'm never leaving the country again, though, if that's what's going to happen during football season when I leave. So I'll have to plan my my travel in the summer.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal. I mean, talking about teams that people love to hate, we should have had the discussion the other day about you're in Madrid, obviously, Real Madrid are the Yankees. Everyone loves them all over the world, blah, blah, blah. Atletico Madrid across the city are definitely in that we love it because everyone hates us gang. They are defensive. They are spiky. They are aggressive. No one likes them. They don't care. And they won the league a couple of years ago. So good fun. Should have mentioned that. Right, and we're going to do a bit of a tour around teams and players and stuff that's going on, and we literally haven't prepared this at all, so it'll be absolutely fine. Why don't we start off with players who have scored a lot of points so far, and we'll just sort of talk about where they've come from, did we see it come in, stuff like that. So we can start off with linebacker, because that's most interesting. So as we speak, obviously Steelers and Browns have played 3 games each. Miles Jack is the guy. And you and me have talked about him quite a bit, and we talked about him in our season preview. Miles Jack's career tackle efficiency is a problem. He's on like 10.7% or something like that. He's generally been bad. This year, he's obviously played a lot more snaps than anybody else. He is a long way ahead in terms of tackles, nearly double any other linebacker, and his tackle efficiency is nearly 20%, which is absurd and otherworldly. Has Miles Jack turned into one of those studs that we see have a year every so often?
I mean, as of right now, 3 games, he's proved it, right? His efficiency has dropped a little bit. I think he's down to near 15%, but still insane. I mean, that's elite numbers. Those are out of like, that's like Darius Leonard. It's like Darius Leonard, Bobby Wagner type numbers. So, you know, he's around the ball. And, you know, it's funny. I put a little bit of a very non-scientific, I guess, test to your theory about linebackers and how they, you know, a team runs a lot, so the linebacker is going to get a lot of tackles. I will say, I'll be honest, I tend to believe that. That's kind of where I'm like, okay, you know, if a team is going to run the ball 25 times, a linebacker is going to probably be around the ball X, you know, maybe X number of times. So I think it was half. I think half of the tackles Jack makes are in passing and then in run. So it's a little bit of both. So I think it's an even, but I think there is definitely some correlation to what you say, though, that more of your tackles or more of your attempts are going to come within the passing game.
Yeah, I'm obviously, we're sort of splitting hairs a little bit. The number one thing that determines linebacker volume It's just volume. It's just how many snaps you play. Yep. So the type of snaps is way less important than how many you get. But you're going to see it a little bit of both. And it's pretty obvious from the Steelers team that Miles Jack is the closest thing they've got to a full-time linebacker. Devin Bush ain't it. He's like a 75% player, something like that. Robert Splaine is coming in for certain snaps. And that's what we're going to see all season long, it seems like.
Yeah, and Devin Bush, I mean, he's been at about 50, I think, for the most part for those first two games. So it was surprising to see him on a little bit more. Mm. And of course, the week that I put Minka Fitzpatrick in my top 10 rankings for DBs, he doesn't do anything. So,
yeah, well, he's doing better.
I don't know what to make about that.
And the other guy, Terrell Edmonds, not his brother. Mm-hmm. Wow, he is so inefficient. It is absolutely
so inefficient.
Untrue. I mean, and it's not a new thing. So we often say high tackle efficiency, it tends to be just a short-term passing fad, luck or something like that. Low tackle efficiency is normally more telling because it's normally more indicative of the way a player's used. Terrell Edmonds, it shouldn't be. My brain wants to say he's just not very good. And I know that's not the cause, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't make the tackles. So, you know, that sucks.
And Minka Fitzpatrick just seems... I actually took a look. I wanted to see... All right, am I missing something with Minka Fitzpatrick? Because now this is like he had a huge game in week one. He had a pretty decent game in week two. I think he was more aided by, I think he had an interception. But I just wanted to see, why is he getting so many tackles? And you know what? He has range, and he's making tackles mm-hmm. that he probably shouldn't be making. And he's just, every time there's a play made, you see 39, whether he has made a tackle or he's just around the ball. So his range is impressive.
Agree with that. And you know which safety is leading the league in tackles at the moment? Marcus Williams, who we use as
another one
exemplar of a deep safety, right? I've literally talked to a massive Ravens guy earlier, and his argument was, look, Marcus Williams is a way better player in the defense, is way better when he's lined up in that natural deep role of him, but you know he's getting around the field. So yeah, years ago, back when strong safety and free safety were much clearer splits between them, then I was really convinced that how much you play in different places in safety really mattered. These days, it's way less important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and safety and roles Williams, are less clear.
Yep. So are you of a belief or are you of the assumption that his production is going to continue?
No, I think he fades back into the pack, but you know, this is where I'm going to get all negative. So you can be mean and shout at me. But frankly, I just don't see a lot of difference between all safeties. I'm sure there's a couple of guys that stand out, but honestly, there's 40 or 50 safeties who in any given week can score well and over the season can score well. And the difference between number one and number 40 just isn't very big to me.
Yeah. I don't know if, because, you know, I've always been, you know, if you're playing, and Marcus Williams is playing 90%, you know, maybe 85 to 90% of his snaps deep, he's away from the ball. So for me, that tells me, okay, this isn't going to last. So if he continues to put up 10 tackles next week, I don't know. I don't have, you know, we're not, you know, we try to predict the future, but it keeps telling me, you know, if this guy can this keep up? And maybe, you know, when you've said it, and I think I believe it a little bit, is he getting the tackles because the linebackers in front of him aren't very good? Is this one of those instances where that might be the case?
Yeah, could be.
Because Patrick Queen is meh. He's not a first round. He's certainly not proving to be worth the draft capital that was placed upon him. So is this maybe one of those cases where the linebackers in front of him just maybe aren't good and they're forced to make plays. It might be another one where I'll maybe look into some context and see some of the plays.
Yeah, I just don't think they're worth investing in. There's things like that, and over a short period of time, you can make it make sense and you can make your argument. So Julian Love, right? At the mm-hmm. Giants, it was college. He's cornerback, basically. Been playing quite a lot in the box. Last week, he massively played in the box, and he had a huge mm-hmm. game. He had loads of tackles. But still, depending on your scoring system at the moment, he's probably going to be safety 30. Maybe he's up to 20. Maybe he's down to 40, something like that. But, you know, great. He had a big week. Does that mean he's going to be a top 12 player next week? Absolutely not. And there's literally 30 or 40 of those guys. So, sure, Derwin James and Jeremy Chin are really sexy names, stuff like that. But those guys are outside the big scorers. So Derwin James, again, depending on your scoring system, I've got him here at safety 20. And I've got Jeremy Chin at safety 34. And to get one of those guys in your team, you are having to draft him 10, 15, 20 rounds ahead of other guys who you can get later, which is clearly just not worth it, because the offensive player you can get if you swap those two over is way more likely to be above his peers.
Yeah, hate to almost use it as an excuse, but it's not an excuse. I think it's literally true. The variance at the position is insane. I mean, I just posted, you know, my top 12 defensive backing rankings from last week, and compared to the scoring, six cornerbacks scored in the top 12. And a couple of guys I didn't even have ranked, and a couple of guys I had outside of my top 50. So it's just one of those maddening positions. And you know,
your predictions aren't bad. That's absolutely normal, actually. It's not shocking and it's not weird. The problem is we just don't, as a community, track what we do and ever go, I only got one of that top 12, right? That's strange. And if everyone did it every week, they'd go, well, that's just normal.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you adjust to it. I'm like, all right, well, you know, maybe I'll take a look a little bit deeper into the week, see if what adjustments, and you adjust, and you adjust to the rankings, and maybe a little bit to your process, and you move on. Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it's
so yeah, without exactly. being
it doesn't mean you're bad.
Yeah, let's get away from the doom and gloom a little bit, because you know, obviously that's calling to me, and we can fall into this deep dark pit of despair. What it means is not there's no point in doing or predicting anything.
No, there is
spending time
right,
on it.
Exactly.
It means you put your assets where it is worth investing and where you can predict the future better. So in IDP in particular, we're looking more at defensive linemen, right? So linebacker and defensive backs are dependent on volume and luck within that. Defensive linemen and pass rushers are way more dependent on how good they are. So I want to talk about some edge rushers. If you look at scoring at the moment, then again, depends on your league. But here's some people at the top. Alex Highsmith, who has played an absurd 208 snaps already. Khalil Mack, Nick Bosa, Max Crosby, Brian Burns, Josh Allen, Miles Garrett. These are all highly drafted Pro Bowl superstar defensive players, and they're making it count. They are generating a high amount of pressure, and they're finishing them off, and they're getting around the ball, and they're doing that not because they play a lot, Alex Highsmith, maybe notwithstanding, but because they're really good at it. So, you know, put your money and put your assets where you can. Those stud pass rushers, not the top 40 guys, there's a big tier, but the top 10 pass rushers, man, they're really good at football.
Yeah, I mean, if you you take a look, you have Cameron Hayward probably in there, but I think one of the surprises that I see especially in terms of pressure rate, you know, we talk, you know, you've got obviously Miles Garrett is one of the guys at the top, but one guy I didn't really think about that I kind of blew off was Justin Houston.
Really good season so far.
Yeah, and. He's right there. I think he's among I think the top four or five in pressures generated. A couple of sacks already. So yeah, Justin Houston is one. But I'm really hoping Furious George gets his first sack this week.
Yeah, I wrote an article about this morning. So from memory, he's got through two games 9 pressures, which is 8th or something like that amongst edges, but 0 sacks. And no player in the NFL has more pressures without a sack, which is just unsustainable. So it's coming, man. The Chiefs' defense actually looked pretty good. And Chris Jones is playing out of his skin. And that's probably helping Furious George. His sacks are coming. This is the cheapest he'll ever be.
Yeah, are you talking Kalaftis or are you talking Jones, the cheapest?
Kalaftis, sorry. Yeah, Chris Jones is the cheapest ever was in the offseason, where people for some reason drafted him as like number 8 interior. It was crazy.
Yeah, no, with Kalaftis, what was interesting, he's got a couple of hits. His win rate is low. So what that is telling me is he's getting blocked, but he's using his talent to get around his blockers, and he's just not stopping until he gets to the quarterback.
Yeah, 100%. He's the classic high motor guy, right? That just doesn't stop and comes at you and comes at you and comes at you. And to be honest, quite a lot of the top guys, Max Crosby, and it still freaks me out how we talk about Max Crosby. When I think about him, I go, well, he's a high effort, high motor guy. And part of this is, you know, unconscious bias. But also, he's a first step guy. He comes out, he comes off the line of scrimmage like he's shot out of a gun. And Max Crosby is sort of the real deal. The gap between him and Miles Garrett is not massive at the moment.
No, it isn't. And he's a guy that has a high pressure rate, a high win rate, but doesn't convert.
Hmm.
I think he's only got a sack. I think he's got 12 pressures. He's got a high win rate. I think he's got it's either 20 or 25%. So he's beating his blocks quick. Like you said, he's got that good first step, but it's for whatever reason, his conversion rate from sacks to pressures just isn't high. And I don't get it. I don't think he's played very good quarterbacks so far. I don't remember their schedule offhand, that are getting the ball out of their hands quick, but it's getting to be maybe a little concerning. But if you have Max Crosby, you can't sell him and you can't drop him. You have to keep him, because if you drop him, someone's going to pick him up. And if you trade him, you're not going to get the value in return.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's an absolute stud based on how he plays in the NFL field. Mm-hmm. Sure, he's had some issues, and it's been a year now of not turning that into IDP points. But every week I watch him just like you, and you go, he is so good. This has got to start turning into points. I don't believe there's just something about the way he plays that doesn't. I think it's just a matter of time. Can we talk about Preston Smith as well? So our buddy Jace DLF talked about Preston Smith last year quite a lot. So his point was, second half of the year, Preston Smith was like second in pressures in the NFL, something crazy like that. But all off season, everyone was, Rashan Gary is going to be a stud. And he showed all that progression from year to year to year. And last year was really good from Rashan Gary. And he was being drafted like 80 picks ahead of Preston Smith or like that. And Preston Smith had the two sacks on Sunday. And they're basically doing about the same as each other this year so far. So if you manage to get Preston Smith super late compared to the people who invest in Rashan Gary, that looks like a great choice at the moment.
Yep, and I'm one of the ones that invested heavily in Rashan Gary. So they have the same amount of sacks. I think Gary's got a few fewer pressures, but yeah, Preston Smith.
Yeah, it's like three over two games.
It's not many, but they're definitely it's that duo that's playing well off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, one's not getting the attention that the other, you know, they're both getting equal amount of attention now, because like, all right, if we pay too much attention to Rashan Gary, Preston Smith is just as good, and he's going to come around. And so they're both getting equal attention and both taking advantage of the, blocks that they're not getting. And they both have pretty good moves.
It's a good defense. I like watching those Packers. I like what they've done. The problem from an IDP point is they're not playing enough at the moment. And I think that'll change. They've had a couple of games where it hasn't quite been the volume we want. There's no particular reason it'll change. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, you sort of look at them and go, we've had a good Gary week, a good Smith week, a couple of good linebacker weeks. And it's sort of camouflaging the fact that a lot of those other guys who are, you know, obviously, if you're not one of the guys who had a good week, it's a truism that you didn't have a good week, but feels a little bit off at the moment. I think we'll see a bit more equalizing there.
Yep.
I tell you who I want to talk about. Let's talk about a couple of edge rushers, a couple more who've got a lot of hype in the summer and are clearly part of that big tier of, they're pretty good. They're fine NFL players, but, you know, on a sit-start point, they're going to disappoint you quite a lot. One of them's hurt, but I want to talk about Odafe Owe of the Ravens. And the Ravens have got no bodies on the edge. Everyone's injured. Everyone's hurt. They just gave Jason Pierre-Paul a job. Owe's fine. You can probably argue he's one of the top 25 edge rushers in the NFL, but you can't really argue he's one of the top 10 or 15. So slightly weird value point for me.
Yeah, I don't know much about what Baltimore's doing. They had Tyus Bowser. And obviously they let Za'Darius Smith, didn't they?
Zach
Green Bay. No.
Yeah, he went off to Green Bay. He left years ago.
They let Judon go.
Last year,
Over to New England. And I think they just figured we could just plug anybody into our system and they'll be able to get to the passer. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be the case right now.
Justin Houston's doing well, but Owe is fine. And then their third guy was Steven Means, who lasted one snap last week and got hurt. And that's it. That's all they've got. So we've got Ojabo. Hopefully Ojabo is fit at some point. Hopefully Tyus Bowser is fit at some point. Who knows? Maybe JPP's got something less, or they don't particularly like him in that system. But it looks like a problem at the moment.
Yeah, Jason Pierre-Paul right now just gets, you know, he's kind of like Melvin Ingram. He got in and he'll probably see some snaps just because of his name and what he's done. So, outside of probably what your big play formats, because they'll probably, well, I don't know. I wonder if there'll be a position update in MFL, because I think he should be a defensive end in MFL. So I don't think they'll switch him to linebacker in the middle of the season.
I mean, yeah, that's a great shout. How do MFL handle that when somebody, you know, obviously their stance is basically they're going to apply them as per team in the summer. And for good or ill, Gary talks about this quite a lot. MFL's point of view has been, we believe in 3-4 versus 4-3, like it's 2005. Okay, none of us like that, but it is what it is. But you're right, JPP wasn't on a team, so surely he's immune from that. Otherwise, you're judging him on a position on a team that he hasn't played for in some time, which is weird.
Yeah, which is not fair. And not fair either.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no good answers here with the whole linebacker versus edge thing. It's just,
no,
the whole system is not great.
No, I don't know what the fix is, because if someone is willing to do the work and make, then that'll be like the platform of choice for IDP players.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the other flip side of that then. Let's talk about some interior alignment. And the player I want to talk about, again, I touched on him in an article this morning, Christian Wilkins. So I wrote up an article in the summer on DLF. So Christian Wilkins is one of those stats to avoid because he had a stupidly high tackle efficiency last year. He had so many tackles. Nobody can do that again. It was just one of those things. Not going to happen again. And so far this year, admittedly only through two games, he's smashing his totals from last year. He's got a crazy number. He's got 13 tackles so far with a tackle efficiency of 15, which should be excellent for a linebacker.
Yes.
So do you remember Chris Borland? Obviously, you remember Chris
Borland. Chris Borland, a one-year wonder.
Right. His tackle efficiency was low 19s. And we've got Christian Wilkins, an interior lineman who's hitting 15, which is... I mean, obviously, it's unsustainable. It'll fall away. But at the moment, if you're sitting there with Christian Wilkins, you've gone, I had a season of brilliant last year, and I've got a couple of games of brilliant this year. If you're in a scoring system which rewards tackles for interior linemen, you are laughing.
Oh, but he was probably your DT1 if you're in a tackle-heavy format, because that's I kind of was the same way. Interior lineman, I mean, is a completely variant position. So when I saw, all right, this dude had 91 tackles. All right, there's no way. I mean, 65, 70 maybe, but no. Yeah, he's 13 in two games, 9 solos, 3 tackles for loss. Yeah, he's a big part of that defense up front, and he's definitely eating into Jerome Baker's tackle share, which, you know, Baker owners are not happy about. But yeah, he's definitely eating into your tackle share. But yeah, if you got him as your DT1 or DT2, you are really liking the return so far. Bills are probably another good matchup. I mean, he could get another 5 or 6 this week.
Yeah, 100%. And it comes back to scoring, right? So, because if you're in one of those leagues, there are many, many where interior alignment are basically only matter if they're pass rushers, then you're shit out of luck, because Christian Wilkins has the same number of pressures in the NFL this year as I do.
Oh, so he has 0.
It's a big, fat 0. So, that's less than ideal. And he's never been an impact pass rusher. He's not bad at it. He's not terrible. We're not talking Snacks Harrison sort of style here. But it's not been a strength. So you look at what he's done in two games, and you go, I'm expecting quite different for the rest of the year, which feels like a weird place to be.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe that's not his job. His job maybe isn't to get to the quarterback. And that's what, I guess, maybe someone like Zach Seiler does, or Raekwon Davis, maybe that's their job. Maybe Christian Wilkins, you know what? We're going to plug him in, and you're just going to stop the running backs from getting anywhere. And that's probably that seems to be what his job is, and he does it very well.
I mean, yeah. A little bit. So the guys on that line, you've got Raekwon Davis, who is a bit more your classic run-stuffing nose tackle, right? That's who he is. Mm-hmm. And then you got Zach Seiler, and Christian Wilkins, who, you know, if we were talking a bit more old-fashioned, we'd say Raekwon Davis is the nose tackle, and Zach Seiler and Christian Wilkins are the big defensive end five techniques. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the plays and the volume they've got, then their ratio of rushing the passer versus playing the run is really, really similar. But for some reason, it's just not translating into actual stats at the moment, which might just be luck. It might be.
Yep. And it does look like he's kind of playing that left that the tackle where he's lining up, I think, over the guard a little bit more. He's got some edge snaps. So that's, I'd have to see if maybe those are where a little bit more of his tackles are coming from. He's got 34 snaps on as a defensive end. So maybe those were where his tackles are coming from. But yeah, he's definitely playing a little bit more.
Yeah, it depends how you define it. And this is typical D-line, right? So
rotating.
When I look at Christian Wilkins, I see him lining heads up over the tackle. You know, our buddy EC would tell me exactly what technique that is, but I don't know off the top of my head because I'm a terrible English person. And that comes down to personal preference. You know, over the tackle, is that an edge? Is that interior lineman? Does it depend on the rest of the line? I don't know, but you're basically taking on the tackle, right? You know, you're still doing that whether you're in a nine technique or heads up over the tackle. So still the same assignment, mostly.
Yeah, mostly.
I mean, Dolphins are weird. And that game against the Ravens was so strange anyway. And you just can't expect them to play games like that very often. Can you?
That game is hysterical to me because, you know, not to reference, I try not to reference my trip, but in this instance, it was really funny. A woman sat at the bar next to me and wanted the person to turn on the Dolphins game. And the bartender's like, well, we don't have the ticket. We just have these two games. And it was New England and Pittsburgh. And then there was another game. And so I just mentioned casually to the lady, I said, I don't know if you want her to turn the Miami game on because right now they're losing 28-7. and she's like, oh, well, thank you for the update. I don't need to worry about it. And then next thing I know, I'm like, oh, God, I hope she was able to catch the game.
You ruined this poor lady's Sunday.
My Sunday got ruined, too. So I think we evened out.
By the way, as an aside, isn't it so much better watching sports in foreign countries? It's just different and it's exciting and I love it.
Well, I technically at that point I wasn't in a foreign country. I was in Charlotte.
Oh, were you back? Ah, yeah.
No, I was at my connector flight, so I was being laid over. So I was in Charlotte.
Okay. Oh yeah,
I wasn't overseas yet.
Oh, I was hoping you were in some Madrid hotel propped up watching the football on a Sunday night. That would have been brilliant.
No, that would have been funny, but no. And yeah. I will say this, I would have a really hard time being a football fan overseas. That would be rough.
Well, some of the week it works out really well. So because games start, certainly London time, 6 p.m., it's really civilized. You sort of spend a whole day with the family doing stuff on Sunday, and then 6 p.m. you go, right, it's football time. And that feels great until you get to about 11 o'clock, and then you're like,
right,
oh, there's another 4 hours of football. I just can't stay up
right,
all night.
Exactly. That's where it would be a problem for me.
Yeah, it's a very different experience. Pros and cons, but yeah, if you love it, then you follow the sport, right?
Actually, I've got a quick question now that we're talking snaps, we're talking, you know, teams and things like that. Something that was really kind of caught me. The Seattle Seahawks aren't playing very many offensive snaps. Very bad offense from what I can tell right off the bat. This isn't meant to be, you know, bad offense is bad for ID, but they're not getting very many snaps. So is this a case where maybe unless you have like an elite guy, so say like Darius Leonard is facing the Seahawks or Roquan Smith is facing the Seahawks, that's a guy you have to play regardless. You start him and you live with the results. You're not going to sit Roquan Smith for someone like, I don't know, Kamu Grugier-Hill or anything like that. But if you have like some fringe guys, do you look at the Seahawks and you're like, all right, if they're only playing 50 snaps, that's not a lot.
Yeah. So the times I've run the data, there is a closer link between rubbish offense equals more defensive snaps than bad defense equals defensive snaps, which doesn't come across as radio very well. But the point is, the Seahawks, and I would argue the Bears as well, who's obviously had a couple of strange games, but man, their offense is absolute dirt. You can sort of argue those teams might have a little uptick. And the correlation we're talking about is like 0.15 R squared. So it's not like these things equal itself, but it's way more important the other way of looking at it. So over the season, yeah, might have an effect. I want to see a bit more data, but yeah, I do suspect there is something there.
Okay. Yeah. Just an aside, and we can go on to talking.
No, it's good.
Players.
Well, let's quickly touch on team volume because I do think it's interesting. So a couple of games in for most teams, we're obviously so highest average defensive snaps. We're looking at who we got. We got the Texans who are averaging 82. It's only two games. Take it with a pinch of salt. The Steelers, who obviously also had an overtime game, this has a massive effect. And the Steelers have played 240 defensive snaps. The 49ers have played 107. So quite significantly more than double. The Steelers played 100 snaps in game one. The Packers have played 103 snaps in two games. So, you know, that stuff's going to have an effect. But the Seahawks led the NFL in defensive snaps 2 years in a row, right? And they're averaging, where are we? 71. So about eighth in the league at the moment. I mean, it's not low. It's not bad, but it's not top.
And you actually know what's funny now that we say that. Guess who the first two opponents were for the 49ers? Two horrible offenses, the Bears and the Seahawks.
Yeah.
So it's only two games, small sample size, but maybe they're, you know, between, you know, Fred Warner has, you know, didn't have a very good game. But the same, you know, Hufanga did, but it'll be interesting to kind of track and see what happens.
I agree. This time last year, it was the Panthers. So my mentions were blowing up with people going, what's wrong with Jeremy Chinn? And the answer was they're playing 53 snaps a game. So you're just not going to have that much. But at the moment, that's the 49ers. Now, they could easily go out this week and play 80 snaps, and we'll be like, oh, it was total nonsense. So that happens a lot early in the season. But also, you do start to see those differences between teams that play 60 snaps and teams that play 70 snaps. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but that's 170 snaps over the season on that sort of average. And that's two or three games. So it adds up quite a lot.
And speaking of Jeremy Chinn, he's in an awful rotation with Xavier Woods, playing, rotating and going back and forth between playing deep and close. And it's not a fun game that Carolina is playing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be pedantic here. I would use slightly different terminology. Instead of calling it rotation, I would just argue they are following the league trend, which is certainly pre-snap lineup way more too high and then rotate them down into, you know, we're talking about exactly the same thing. Yeah. But terminology in defensive football, it just is not that adequate for describing the modern game because all the terminology is 20 years old and it was just a different sport.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think a lot of people care about the terminology. They just want to say, hey, where is this guy playing? Is he playing deep? Is he playing close? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what they want to know. And it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. We shouldn't be elitist about this. I mean, my whole thing is I want somewhere in between. Defense is a 3-4 or 4-3, and that's it. There's nothing else. And memorizing Nick Saban's playbook. There is somewhere in between there where we can talk about stuff and it can make sense and to be able to tell defenses apart without having to spend every waking moment on studying this stuff.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
It's taken me 25 years to understand that and get to that point. So maybe it's not that simple.
Eventually. we'll get there eventually.
All right. What other team can we talk about? Can we talk about the Cardinals? I think the Cardinals are interesting. Yes. So the Cardinals defense is obviously awful. It's really, really bad. Isaiah Simmons is really interesting. So Isaiah Simmons has gone that typical sort of curve of coming out of draft season, everyone's like, he's going to change the game because he's quite big and he can run two, maybe he's not. Second year, it will be fine. And he's not very good at anything. And then he played, 15 snaps last week? And there's been no news of it. There didn't appear to be an injury. It appeared to be a tactical decision. But is that true? Is he going to play 50 snaps again next week? What the hell do you do if you've got Simmons on your roster?
I think if you have Isaiah Simmons, I would probably be selling. I'd just be selling off of the name. So, but Kansas City makes a lot of people look bad, I think, right?
Yep.
I mean, they're a really dynamic offense. Mm-hmm. Andy Reid is a really good play, is a really good schemer. And then Kansas City made Simmons in particular look really bad. But week two, he played 15 snaps. Mostly, and I think most of those were coverage snaps. He did not play in the run because he was horrible against the Chiefs against the run in week one. But in 15 snaps, and PFF graded him relatively higher. Almost, I mean, his grades were like doubled. So maybe it's play him less and he's better. But if that's the case, you can't play him as an IDP. And if I was a Simmons owner right now, there's no way I'm putting him in a starting lineup. I'm benching him this week to kind of just see what the hell is going on.
Agreed. I mean, last week things were, so Zaven Collins has turned into an every down linebacker, right? So he's the one guy on that defense we can trust, and that was sort of obvious after Jordan Hicks left. Even they had to invest, they had to give him the season to see what happens, even if he sucks. So we're fine. But then Simmons was quite significantly behind Tana Vallejo and Nick Vigil last week, and that's not a good sign at all.
No, it really isn't. But those guys are kind of like journeymen. And you were a first-round pick.
So we ask this question a lot, but it's always terrifying. Can you tell me the three best defenders on this Cardinals defense?
I'd probably say Byron Murphy.
JJ,
maybe Jalen Thompson.
Yeah, maybe Jalen. I'm instantly we're getting into shaky territory, though, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean JJ Watt's always hurt.
Yeah, I thought it was good last week, but yeah, I take your point. So the issue is defense is the weakest link system, right? So the great example is the Chargers, and every year the Chargers go, they got Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa and Derwin James. You go, yeah, but their starting linebacker is Drew Tranquil or Kenneth Murray. So if you're an offensive coordinator, it's really easy to attack them. And you look at the Cardinals and go, oh, who's the weakest link? And your answer is sort of all of them, actually. Pretty much everybody is a weak link. So do what you want.
Linebackers, you can just kind of run it up. And if you get to the second level, you'll be in good shape. If you attack anybody else but Byron Murphy, you should be in good shape. They've used all of this draft capital on their defense, and they've just gotten nowhere.
Yeah, it sucks. All right, I've got a segue here, and we're gonna move on to better things. So the Cardinals, for me, are one of the two worst defenses in the NFL. The other worst defense so far, hope I'm wrong, is the Lions, who have been awful for the last few years. But we're going to good news. So we always complain about Alex Anzalone and his flowing hair. He's terrible. Malcolm Rodriguez has come out of the gates on fire. So sixth round draft pick, I believe. And there was a drumbeat. We were talking about him all summer. I think everybody in the IDP world sort of grabbed him late in their rookie drafts. Weirdly, we've all got him in every league. I don't know quite how that works, but it's true. You look at the situation at the moment and go, Malcolm Rodriguez has played 100 snaps out of 145 so far. Surely it's a matter of time till he is the guy on this defense.
I would hope so. Just the way he plays, he's a completely different cat than anybody else that they've ever had. I mean, look at the first round picks Gerard Davis, come on. come on. But you look, and this isn't a Hard Knocks bias, because, you know, we latch onto these guys because I am so glad I don't have that job where I have to release people, because we get attached to some of these guys and we're like, all right, we really want to see him succeed. And but Rodriguez is really good. He's getting marks and he's getting talked like coaches are saying he's never seen people learn and adapt and make these mental adjustments and these mental moves. And, you know, when you've got coaches saying, you guys are getting beat out by a sixth round rookie who are making these moves. You've got some, you better have all your eyes open. You better be coming after this kid. And I'm hoping, after seeing last week, I think he hit the 70% snap threshold, or maybe he got a little close, but
pretty close.
He's playing. He's coming after jobs.
Very exciting. So hypothetically, let's talk about this. I don't think he's viable at the moment because, you know, all of the guys like us that have got him on the roster, you're sitting there at the moment and going, I've won. I hit my lottery ticket. Of course, you're not going to sell. But hypothetically, if I offer you a first round pick for Malcolm Rodriguez, are you selling?
If you came to me and gave me a first round pick for Malcolm Rodriguez,
okay,
I would be like, Tom, enjoy Malcolm Rodriguez as a
first round pick. Excellent. Right, let's go the other way. If I offered you a fourth round pick for Malcolm Rodriguez, what do you say?
Probably want a little bit more thrown in.
Yep. Okay. So, right. Here we go. We've assuming we're talking single pick. We're somewhere in the middle. So third round pick. What do you do?
I'd give it a little bit more consideration though than the fourth round pick.
Okay. And a two?
To enjoy Malcolm Rodriguez, Tom. I'll take the second round pick.
There we go. So sure, because you probably got him as a seventh round pick, maybe undrafted, and you picked him up straight after, something like that. If you can profit with the second round, super, super tempting. It would be really tempting to say no and ride him, but I think you're right. I think taking a two is smart. Taking a three is probably smart, but it wouldn't feel very good, so I probably wouldn't feel good.
Third round would feel a little like, oh my God. I think third is where you probably start getting that fear of missing out. Like, did I just sell way a little bit too low?
Yeah, and third round, right? So a third round is not that exciting. So one of the big wars in the summertime was where the big pass rushers go, and Trayvon Walker was going in third round in seven round rookie draft, certainly most of the ones that I was doing, and he was going ahead of George Karlaftis. So that's the sort of return we're talking about. Third round doesn't sound very exciting, but in IDP, that is a bet at a first round edge rusher.
Yeah, I think in the third, if you get a third round pick, you're looking at a potentially elite IDP. In third round.
Yeah, you should be.
At least by the third round, probably all of the really good position players are probably well gone. I would imagine, I imagine at that point. But yeah, if you get a third round, you're probably looking at either, like you said, an elite edge rusher, or you're looking at one of the top two or three linebackers.
Yeah. All right. Here's the second part of the segue, and I'm quite pleased with this because you've moved on to the second one. So when we talk about elite edge rusher, we're talking about those first round guys. We know there's a massive difference between edge rushers taking the first 15, 20 picks and even everyone after that. So the other Lions player that we need to talk about is Aiden Hutchinson, who had three sacks last week. I don't think he looks quite as good as Matt suggests, but he's clearly a very good player and he's going to have a very good future in the NFL.
Yeah, you saw him on Hard Knocks, and you see a football player. You don't like those intangible terms. He's a culture changer. You know, it's one of those a fluff heading. It's he's a culture changer. You don't really know what it means. You don't know how to measure it, but that's what he is.
He's got to ride that. I mean. So that sort of sweet point for rookie edge rushers. Aiden Hutchinson was generally going about the first guy. Kayvon Thibodeau was going about the same, and they were going mid second round, late first round, that sort of thing. It's a bit too rich for me, but Trayvon Walker at 305 or whatever he was, I was jumping on quite a lot because that just felt really tempting. So somewhere in between those two guys is probably about right. But then we talk about who that was. It was probably Jermaine Johnson. Actually, we'll talk about the Jets next. Oh my golly, I'm going to segue heaven here. Let's talk about Jermaine Johnson. So the Jets defense looks slightly better. Couldn't look any worse, but they don't look great. What is really interesting for me is the edge rusher rotation. So we spent all summer talking about it's going to be Cole Lawson. He's hurt. John Franklin Myers, my boy. Yep. Jermaine Johnson's first round pick, blah, 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 blah. The answer is actually they're all playing. They're playing five guys every week because Jake Martin and Michael Clemens are getting some time as well. And if none of those guys are getting a huge amount of volume, none of them are great starts, are they?
No, and especially if there's not a guy that's doing something that is so much head and shoulders above somebody else that you have to play. I bought, Carl Lawson, and actually your boy John Franklin Myers, the three initial guy. I think he's one of the top grader from PFF on the Jets, but. Lawson has done well with his pass rush snaps, but there's five guys in this rotation right now. So Carl Lawson, I think, is leading the pass rushers in snaps. So
he is.
I trust him a little bit more than anybody else right now.
So I sort of agree with you, and you're right. He is leading them. He's played 68 snaps through two games. That is the same as Randy Gregory, just ahead of Adi Ugandeji and TJ Watt, who didn't even play. The last two games, which is about 60th most. So if your best guy is playing 60th most, we talked about pass rush and edge rushers, it's more about talent, it's more about ability than volume. But you've got to be really talented to play the 60th most and convert that to be amongst the top 24, which in most leagues you're going to need to be. And that's just not very sustainable to me.
Yeah, it's tough. In the leagues I have, I think in the leagues I do have Lawson, it's tough. He's tough as my DL too with that type of volume, but he's a big upside guy. I don't think he's ever been a big tackle guy. So you've always drafted him because he could go off. He was always a pressure monster in Cincinnati. Yep. So you're just kind of hoping for that week that he has like a two or three sack game and you kind of ride that wave.
yeah, this was a problem early in his career, right? People were looking at sack numbers and going, oh, give him more time. In this old-fashioned idea that you sort of, you know, want to give your top guy all the snaps. And the Bengals, quite rightly, I would argue, never thought he should be that. And the Jets did, and then it went badly last year. And I'm not sure he's the guy that's ever going to get that role at this point, which doesn't mean he's a bad player. It just means he's a specialist, and modern defense is about specialists. The other thing about the Jets, which I think is quite interesting. Here's my backstory, and some of this is supposition, so feel free to shoot me down. Robert Saleh, I've been quite critical of. He took over a really bad defense at the Jets, and he somehow made them much, much, much worse. And he was the worst defense in the NFL by a mile last year. If he doesn't fix that this year, that's the last chance he gets to be an NFL head coach. His dream job is over, and he's just coordinator for the rest of his career. Unless, who knows, he takes a college job somewhere or something like that. So what I see him doing in two games is he's gone old school, and he's gone, right, we've got to stop the run. You win in the trenches. And he's rolling out there with three linebackers, like a lot, like over 50% of snaps, like it's 2005, which is great. He sort of has stopped the run a little bit. He did a really good job against the Ravens. Unfortunately, it's really easy to pass on a team with three linebackers. So I'm not sure if he's going to fix the defense that way. Now, he's the NFL head coach. He's forgotten more about defense than I'll ever know. But it looks like an overreaction to me at the moment.
Yeah, of all of your first coaching jobs, you hit your line on the Jets. That's a rough sell. But yeah, it's basically, I mean, you said three linebackers. It's been Mosley, Alexander, and Quincy Williams. Quan Alexander. So yeah, but Quincy Williams doesn't do a whole lot of things. He's not, you know, good at anything or really not horrible, but he is what he is. He's a guy, right?
Just a guy.
Yeah, they're just. Yeah, I think they did. What did they hold? Chubb scored three times, but they held him to under 100 yards. So at least they got that to go on, and they got the win. But yeah, I don't. They don't have very, their safeties are eh. And then their secondary is meh. So I think it's just an all around meh team.
Yeah, I mean, look, we like Sauce Gardner. He's an exciting player. I hope he has a future. But you look at their nickelback, who's the good Michael Carter, and he's played 50 snaps in two games, which is that's obviously less than 50% of snaps. So they are committed to this old school 4-3 defense. And I mean, good luck to them. I always root for bad teams turning themselves around, and the Jets have been one of the worst teams in the NFL over the last decade. So good luck to them.
Rooting for the underdog. That's you. You're always the cockeyed optimist.
All right. Who can we be optimistic about? Who do I like? Let's talk about the Raiders, because there's a defense I think can turn themselves around a little bit. Divine Diablo. So obviously Denzel Perryman missed last week. Divine Diablo played 87 snaps, and he had a really good fantasy day. At the moment, I'm not convinced that Perryman comes in and claims that job again. I think they might just go with Diablo, and to a lesser extent, Jayon Brown appears to have dragged himself back from the brink of irrelevance as well. He had a good game last week, played 70 snaps.
Yep, he took advantage of Perryman's injury, so kind of what Al Shaer did all last season. So I will be honest. This isn't a victory lap. This isn't patting myself on the back, but I really like Divine Diablo coming into this season. I wrote him up at 4 for 4 as that's the Raider linebacker that I want, and that's the guy that I'm targeting, because we don't know. I mean, Denzel Perryman, a complete outlier season. I mean, you basically got him off your waiver wire in week one, and he came off and had this insane season because he was healthy. And even in week one, when Divine Diablo and Perryman were on the field together, Diablo was calling the plays. So he usurped that role from Perryman. I didn't want to assume Perryman was going to get the same role, because it was a completely different coaching staff, completely different defensive coaching staff. There was no loyalty to anybody. So Perryman was kind of a fade for me all draft season. He'll play, you know, because he's a body. But yeah, Jayon Brown could fixture in. And a name that has just surfaced up, which was very interesting, Blake Martinez is going to be visiting. So that's going to be something to also keep an eye on. Patrick Graham, obviously, and Blake Martinez have a relationship from the Giants.
Yeah, I've always been less optimistic in general, but specifically Raiders linebackers this year, because I thought Patrick Graham and Josh McDaniels just are very close to that Belichick tree, and that Belichick tree tends to, you know, have those linebackers lining up over the A gap and running in and plugging it in those old-fashioned fronts, rather than a modern coverage first linebacker. So one of the reasons why I didn't like any of the linebackers, because I didn't really think any of them play all the snaps. The second one, I never thought Divine Diablo really fit into that system very well. And the third one is, I never really got on board with Diablo because I hated the way they drafted him in the third round, a year after they drafted Tanner Muse in the third round, who were, to all intents and purposes, the same damn player. Certainly same style. So I may have missed out a lot. I've picked up a few freebies because it was pretty obvious he was going to get a chance, and you have a gamble at it, but I suspect I was a bit low on him on most people, and he's certainly got a chance at this stage of having a really good season.
Yeah, and to fit in, like, you know, he's a converted safety, so he has some coverage ability, so I think that's kind of what I think that may have been what they liked about him coming into the season, because he can do a little bit of, you know, he can do the coverage thing if they need him to and not completely embarrass himself like some players are prone to do at the linebacker position, just are completely embarrassed in coverage, and that's not their fault, that's not what they've been trained to do, but but Diablo I think has that has a good mix, and I'm not really at all worried about Perriman. If I was a Perriman owner, I'm more worried about Jayon Brown. But if I'm a Diablo owner, I'm not expecting 15 tackles a game. But I think he provides a safe floor. I would start him this week. Certainly 7 to 8 tackles a game isn't out of the question.
Yeah, agreed. Jayon Brown, a similar sort of player, right? Back in his pomp at the Titans, he was their best coverage linebacker. And he was really good. Now he obviously got hurt and fell off and never got it last year, but yeah, looks potentially a much more modern defense than I expected. I need to do a bit of studying them next week, I think.
Yeah, and I'm still a big fan of Jonathan Abram, even though I don't know what he is, but for whatever reason, I'm a fan of Abram, so I always like him too.
All right, let's talk about another player who's come out firing, Devin Lloyd. Devin Lloyd has played really well. Now, we thought he was going to be a full-time linebacker. He sort of is. He wasn't quite in week one. He was in week two, even though the Jags only played 50 snaps as they beat the Colts down. Chad Mooma didn't get on the field last week. Don't know if he was healthy. Don't know if it was choice. Devin Lloyd looks every bit of what they expect him to be. So here's a massive hit at the moment. He was a little bit risky because you had to invest highly to get him in rookie draft, but he looks like he's going to pay that off at the moment.
Yeah, I was a little bit, for redraft, I was a little bit worried for him coming in because I don't like soft tissue injuries for rookies. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit of a worry, but as of right now, that first preseason game that he played in, he looked every bit of the part of the linebacker where that's a first round pick. So, if you're able to get him a little bit cheap, you're certainly liking the returns. I think he upped his snap rate. I think he's around 94%. Tackle rate is around 14 so far through two games. But yeah, certainly looking like a full-time guy opposite Oluokun.
Yeah, very excited about him. Let's talk about the other rookie linebacker that I've liked a lot. Didn't expect early returns. Troy Anderson got on the field, made his NFL debut last week. He played 9 snaps. It's not a lot. Not a lot.
Yeah.
our argument was always, right, we sort of liked him for the second half of the season a little bit, and we really like him for next year. So, you know, don't get your hopes up. But it also appears like the Falcons may have looked at Rashawn Evans and gone, oh, this guy actually plays like Rashawn Evans. Maybe that's not that exciting. Michael Walker's done quite well, but you know, I'm not convinced that Evans hangs on for another 10 weeks.
No, I'm not either. I think if Deion Jones comes back, Rashawn Evans is probably, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, now that he's restructured, he might get traded. I don't know, but if he comes back, I think it'll probably be more of a hurt on Evans's role than Michael Walker's.
Yeah, it's not a deal at all there. What about J.D. Garrett? Grady Jarrett even. I don't know who J.D. Garrett is. He sounds very southern. Grady Jarrett had, a sack and a half in the first week? And I said to you last week in our abandoned show, I look a bit stupid because I thought he was going to fall away, and then he didn't do anything in week two. So how are you feeling about him?
that's a defensive tackle position for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not much to say. I mean, that's the analysis. That's really just what it is. It's a defensive tackle position.
Yeah, I'm unconvinced about that. All right, let's talk about one last team, I think, and then we'll probably try and wrap it up. I want to talk about the Bengals. So it's very easy to look at the Bengals and go, they made it to the Super Bowl. It's a Super Bowl hangover. They believed in themselves too much, or blah, 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 all these narratives. I would argue the Bengals weren't that good last year, although it came together in January for them, and they're not that good this year. They're a pretty bad defense, aren't they?
Not great. Trey Hendrickson hasn't gotten off to a good start. And he was, you know, the main guy. You know, we talked about him last week, although the episode that we talked about, it didn't make it to air. But we said Trey Hendrickson, high pressure, Sam Hubbard, high tackle, but it seems to be they've definitely switched. Hubbard has the pressures and has the sack, but Hendrickson has not made an appearance yet in the stat sheet for sacks. So I mean, granted, two games, yes, you know, really early, but yeah, so far, I don't know. I thought they fixed not talk about offense, but their offensive line doesn't seem to be very good either.
Yeah, the whole thing just looks like a mess to me. I'm pretty worried about Trey Hendrickson. I think there's a decent chance he's just not in the right space or not playing well or whatever it is. But I certainly don't think he's going to have the sort of impact he did last year when he had whatever it was, 14 sacks or something like that. And he was, you know, he was a one-dimensional player, but he was a red-hot pass rusher. And he just doesn't look like that guy at the moment.
No, I think he is a guy, though, that can go off. So I don't know. He's not an elite rusher like Myles Garrett to where, like, all right, if Myles Garrett goes 1 to 2 games without a sack, it's like, who cares? I'm not worried about it. So Trey Hendrickson, though, if he does go another game or two without a sack, I think it's time to, like, oh, okay, maybe I'll try to cut my losses on it.
Yeah, it's a worry. And then you look at Logan Wilson, linebacker, right? A load of people absolutely love Logan Wilson. Got hurt last year, obviously, and he's come back and, you know, he's playing, but he's not very productive. His tackle efficiency is under 10%, which is very low for a linebacker. Not really done anything else. So, I mean, he'll probably turn it around. I believe in him from a volume point of view, but he's top 36 guy. I'm not sure he's top 12 guy. I don't feel confident in that at all. So, a lot of the players you looked at last year and thought were really good are just not firing. The defensive line, you've got BJ Hill and DJ Reader. I mean, sure, they're good run stoppers. They're both fine. But there's nothing at corner. And safety looks average.
Well, Awuzie, I don't think, is bad. Awuzie's a good corner.
Well, he was really good last year. I'm really intrigued at what he does this year because he was so talented. He was that long cover three cornerback that came out of college and he never really did anything. Had that one really good year as a Bengal where it all came together. And now we're like, okay, you've got a few more dollars. Can you do it or not? And he's massively in the balance for me.
He was one of those guys where he was bad for IDP, but good for all 22. So, like, I drafted him as, like, one of my main cornerbacks in the all 22 leagues I was in. So, that's kind of what I'm hoping for. And Von Bell isn't bad. Bates is, I think, I don't know, Bates getting off to a slow start, I think.
Definitely.
Maybe the hold-in has an impact. But, yeah, the Bengals are definitely the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know. I think it's real.
Something's going on. So Von Bell is fine. Look, I believe in Von Bell. I like him, but he's probably not in the top 30 safety scorers in anybody's league at the moment. So
No.
We've got Mike Hilton, but again, he's a good real-life NFL player. He's not putting up the points. So the whole of the Bengals at the moment just looks like a big, deflated, sad fart.
I think, I think Hilton was... I don't know. Maybe Hilton was a system guy because he performed really well in Pittsburgh's system, did a lot of different things very well, and just doesn't seem to be translating with Cincinnati.
Yeah, I really like him as a player. He's certainly not producing so much on the field, and that's partly Steelers defense, right? They've always produced good slot guys.
Yep. Actually, real quick, two more things I want to ask
about. Go.
So, what do we do with the Saints? through two games. I think they have 11 total pressures. Marcus Davenport, I think, has 3, and Cameron Jordan has 1.
Yeah, it's not ideal, is it?
It's very suboptimal for all of us who kind of invested it. Jordan was just one of those guys that you rode till the wheels fell off, and is this the beginning of the wheels falling off?
Yeah, here's a good stat for you at the moment. You're totally right. Saints, 11 pressures through two games. The Chiefs, who we talked about before, not known as a great defense, 49 pressures. I mean, that's a big difference.
Yes. I mean, the Saints were a good... from what I remember, the Saints were a really good pass rushing team. I think the Saints were up high and the Falcons were below. Yep. And I remember now seeing that has switched. And I think the Falcons, but you see 11 pressures. It's like, that's not good. This is what the Saints did last year.
Yeah. I mean, I still think they're a decent defense because they hold up really well against the more mundane things. And I've got a little bit of faith in them turning around, but Mario Davis is not playing well. The pass rusher is not playing very well. Yep. Yeah. It's definitely a worry. They have been amongst top five defenses in the NFL the last 3 or 4 years. I agree with you. It looks like they're taking a step back. It looks like it might be a tricky year for them.
Yep. And then one more player who I think is also going to be a big time point of contention for a lot of us. And this isn't to say that rankings are wrong or that anybody's doing anything wrong. But just an interesting to seeing Micah Parsons as the dynasty LB1.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've shifted him in my system. I've moved him to edge now because that's
kind of what he is. That's what he's become. Right. And the people that are ranking him as the LB1 are, you can't be believing that he's going to be averaging a sack and a half to 2 sacks a game.
Of course not. He may well be the best pass rusher in the NFL. But thought experiment. If we took Myles Garrett and we said, you've got to value him as a linebacker, would he be the number one linebacker you take in IDP? No, he wouldn't be. He wouldn't be. I mean, maybe he's a top 12 guy. Maybe he's a top 24. Depends on your scoring. But he's absolutely not that number one guy. So it's really hard to believe.
I guess my question is, are you hoping within maybe the course of the rest of the season or next season or the next couple of seasons, are you hoping that they switch him to off-ball linebacker? And at this point, with how he's playing, why would they switch him to off-ball linebacker? Because his impact is obviously on the edge.
A top pass rusher from the edge is way more valuable in NFL terms than a really good linebacker, and that means a really good linebacker who can stand up in coverage, which is not what Micah Parsons is. Yeah, I'm with you. As an IDP person, I was skeptical about him anyway. I valued him as a top 12 guy, not as the top one guy. But I'm struggling now. Do I want him to be an off-ball linebacker that gets 8 sacks a year, maybe 10, or do I want him to be an edge who gets an extra 20 tackles because he plays linebacker sometimes? Neither of them sound great.
If he does get converted, I mean, if he gets that DL or edge conversion, and that's how he's recognized, I mean, I have no problem putting him into a top one or two defensive lineman ranking dynasty. Yep. No problem with that. But if he's still going to remain the linebacker, I don't know. Because you're comparing him. I mean, if you're comparing linebackers, I mean, you're comparing, he's not Shaq Leonard. He's not Devin White. He's not Roquan Smith. That's not what he's doing right now.
Yes, 100% agree. And you know, he didn't have that tackle floor last year. His tackle efficiency was the lowest of any significant linebacker just about in the NFL. And if the trends that we've seen so far continue, it's going to be way worse than that. It's going to be half that. So
yeah, it's because of the edge snaps.
Risky.
That's bringing him down. Because when I saw what he did as an off-ball linebacker, his tackle rate climbed a little bit. His tackle rate was within that LB2 range, around 11-12%. But yeah, you bring in those edge snaps and out of the 58 snaps last week, he played 55 on the edge.
Yep.
I don't know. It's what do you do with him if he's a linebacker? What do you do with him? He's obviously a very good player.
it depends what you can get from him. So let's talk about Hall again. If someone offered you a first round pick,
I'm glad you brought this up because you know what? I actually, I had a quick chat with somebody today. He had some questions about strategy and how do you play matchups and things like that. And so I got on a quick chat with him and he mentioned Micah Parsons. He sold Micah Parsons for a 23 first round pick. And I said, bravo to you, because yeah, he is not going to average 2 sacks a game. And he actually sold him for a first round pick. And I'm like, that's perfect. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, agree. I love that. So, and it feels bad, right? But we were having the same conversation about Devin White probably 14 months ago. And for most of last year, if you sold Devin White for a first round pick, you were laughing. And he wasn't bad. He didn't fall off. He finished at, what, LB 10 to 12 to 15 last year, something like that. He's absolutely fine. That's valuable in today's game. It's just, if someone's going to buy him like he's the top guy, then that's profit.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, I totally agree.
Man, this game is hard, isn't it?
It really is, and that's why I don't like when people say, Mike, you're a great expert. I'm like, I don't consider myself an expert. I consider myself an enthusiast. I love IDP, and I try to watch it, and I try to pay attention to it, and I'm trying to master it, and it's never going to happen. You just kind of try to keep adapting to it and use your best judgment, use your best knowledge, and give the information that you can. But it's a fun puzzle to try to solve.
Yeah, agree. It's a beautiful system, and the fact that fantasy football is such a good game is mainly based on the fact that there is so much variance and randomness in it. Because if we were really good at predicting it, it would be boring as shit, and the clever people with the algorithms would win every time, and nobody would really enjoy that. So, you know, embrace the fact we can't predict it.
And if we were very good at it, I would probably be doing my own business and making a lot more money than I am right now.
Well, you told me what you earn for your day job. And man, it was like 4 times what I expected, because I don't think you're that talented or clever. So, you know,
no,
you're doing well.
I'm a very good BS.
All right. On that point, before we do ourselves in the ground anymore, let's wrap it up. Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat football. It always is. We'll try and get together next week. But mainly I'm looking forward to another week of football. It should be really good fun. Absolutely. So we'll watch it together on Sunday night and enjoy.
Absolutely. Good luck in all of your fantasy leagues this week. And of course, Tom and I are always available on Twitter. Tom is a little bit ahead of the game, being in London and
in the future.
We're always available. Yeah, we're always that was actually very funny. I'm like, Tom, you know, I don't know if you saw my trash talk with some, you know, I didn't know if I was up or down in my all 22 league. And Josh said, I think you're down. And I'm like, up, it's 10:30 in Spain. I can see the future. You have already lost.
Welcome to our jokes. You can be one of us. All right. We'll knock on the head there. Thanks very much, everybody at home. Really appreciate it. I hope you have a great week. I hope you win your matchups, and I hope you enjoy it. Cheerio.